The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Strigger. I'm back with my man, Dylan. Dylan, we have some shows from last weekend to talk about. This is actually the first day that I really have any time to think about what happened last weekend with New Japan, Big Japan, All Japan, and the Noah Axis thing. We're going to talk about that, plus we're going to talk about Assemble in the end as well. How are you doing, my man?
I'm just so happy to be back with you, so happy to be back with the listeners, and I also do want to say one thing to everybody out there, because we're recording this on what would be Hanakimura's birthday today. And I got a lot of all kinds of cool comments. I want to shout somebody out who messaged me, actually, on Twitter. And he had made this very wonderful music video. So check out this user at DigitizedKnight on Twitter. He made a great music video. He had a great painting that he made of Hanakimura. Check out his profile on Twitter. He has some really cool stuff. And check out our tribute show that we made to her a few months ago as well, if you haven't yet. A lot of people even said nice things, and I was very touched by a lot of the comments I had. Again, shouting out another user here, which is very nice what he had to say. Shout out to at Esperante Negro, Futuro Goldo on Twitter. He actually listened to it before, and he said he's going to listen to it again now on his birthday. Like, that's how good it was. So I really appreciate all of that, and I just wanted to say that because it might be the last time we get to bring this situation up again for a while at least. So just know that we never forgot you, Hana. And shout out to all the fans out there. And hopefully everything's going good with Kyoko, who has started a pro wrestling tea store as well, getting all kinds of proceeds from the shirts they sell there for Hana's shirts. So yes. I check that out as well if you want to support her. It goes to a really good cause, goes right to her. I think that's really cool, and I wanted to mention that right off the top.
Kenny Omega was wearing a shirt on Dynamite of Hana.
Yes, I saw that. I was very happy to see that, to be honest with you. And God knows I have a lot of thoughts on him personally and everything, but there's no question. That's just awesome. And a very noble act on his part and AEW's as well to promote it as well. They not only did he wear it, but they actually promoted the entire store. Yes. So I thought that was awesome.
They did. And yes, of course, our show, we put a lot of heart in that. I just listened to the first minute of it back again, and I get goosebumps from that again, because it reminded me of the state of mind I was in back then. And yeah, we'll never forget her. There will be instances where we'll bring that up again, and it's so great to see that her mom is I don't want to say moving on, but like trying to cherish her history, you know.
Yes, and there's been all kinds of movements on that front when it comes to Terrace House and a lot of stuff that's come out. Some of her castmates supporting her and stuff, and Kyoko was really spearheading a lot of that, going after the networks and stuff, and taking on a very brave fight for her daughter. So I'm very proud of Kyoko Kimura and all that she's done for Hana's and her memory as well.
Also, on that note, I want to mention, I just read about it a couple of minutes before we started the recording, the unfortunate, very early passing of Casey Michael in the age of 26. One of the most inspiring journalists when it comes to women's professional wrestling worldwide. The way he promoted and pushed for women's wrestling to be more than a piece of the show and be a centerpiece of attention was so inspiring. Just the way he talked about women's wrestling, the way he promoted the wrestlers, the way he talked about the wrestlers. It was just great to see. And I gotta say, I from his Twitter, I saw that he wasn't doing well, but seeing that was a punch to the stomach.
He's a fighter, man. He was going through so much that last year or so of his life. I didn't know him that well, but, you know, we talked now and then, you know, like me and him, and he was just such a great advocate for women's wrestling. Just like you said, that was really his main thing in wrestling. And he had so many cool, you know, friends in the business, too, just like the women's wrestlers themselves. And they all respected him and what he did. You know, like him and everything he stood for when it comes to women's wrestling is always going to be remembered. And you see it now. Like, he was kind of, you know, with Squared Circle Sirens, his website that he had, that really had all kinds of followers and follow-ups and different sides of things that really focused on the women's side of wrestling. And he was, like, the main guy for it. So, like, he did so much amazing work. And even when he was going through all his health issues the last year of his life, he still kept fighting for it and still kept pushing for it. And, you know, it's not like I always agreed with him or anything like that. You know, everybody's got their own opinions on things. But he was, like, such a, you know, such a strong fighter. And such a good guy and a great representative for women's wrestling. So, like you said, I was very sad when I heard that. I heard that last night. I think you might have been asleep when it happened because of the time zone and stuff like that. But I was there, like, right when it got announced. I was like, oh, man, like, would that happen? And I know a lot of people are really close to him and are going to miss him even more than us. But I definitely am glad you brought him up because he deserves a shout-out in the world of Joshi, but also just women's wrestling anywhere in the world, you know, especially in America. So shout-outs to Casey Michael. I hope you're resting in peace, man.
Totally. So, yeah, that brings us then to our first topic. We want to talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling because, of course, they had their big summer struggle in Jingu show this past Saturday. And right after the show, Tetsuya Naito brought up the idea of running a yearly outdoor show in the summer. What do you think about that, Alan?
If things are popular enough, I see no reason why it shouldn't happen. Hopefully next year we'll not have to deal with all of the stuff that this did in terms of the virus and the pandemic and the lesser arena limits or whatever you want to say. You know, but yeah, I think it's a very good idea if New Japan is profitable enough, which I think they are. It's hard to tell right now, unfortunately, but you know, they must have some kind of metrics that determine that. If you had asked me that a year ago, I probably would have said, yeah, I think they could do it. So we'll see what happens if that could carry over. I do think it's a little risky. And I mean, you know, we talked about great last episode, Assemble, we mentioned a little bit later, but I do think it's weird how all of these companies are having these wild new ideas in the middle of this pandemic. And you just don't know, you know, like, you know.
Yeah. When the thing you need the most is just a steady, ongoing wrestling product. I don't know if we need any fancy ideas right now. At least I would just love to have the regular wrestling from each promotion that I'm used to. But we're going to talk about that when we talk about King of Pro Wrestling.
Yeah.
What do you think about the draw? They mentioned 4,710 fans. Would you say that you can't tell that is a success? Or would you have expected more because they did not announce that it was a sellout?
I think things are so up in the air right now, I can't give you a definitive answer. But obviously, I think there's one thing that's for sure. When they came up with this concept, they wanted more, you know, before they knew that, yeah, you know. So I think however you want to slice it, this was just a terrible timing more than anything. I don't think you could really blame anything. And I know we're going to get into the main event, which, you know, a lot of fingers are getting pointed at right now, especially the champion or the former champion. But I just don't think you can blame any one person or anything in terms of wrestling. I just think it's bad timing. And I don't. Maybe they had to do this. This could have been booked in so far advanced that they thought it would all be okay by now. Maybe they didn't even know if it went back that far. We just don't know. You know, these are questions we don't know. So I can't say for sure, but I could say that whenever they booked this show, they definitely didn't want to have 4,000 or so fans.
At least we can say that the corona numbers in Tokyo specifically did not reach a new high. they're somewhat of declining, I read recently, so at least that's good news for wrestling in Japan and in Tokyo. But let's get into the show. The greatest part about that show, in my opinion, was how the sky changed during the show, like going from afternoon in Japan to into the sunset. That was really cool to see. That's the greatest part about any outdoor show, is when the circumstances change. So that happened here in Jingu 2. And, well, to cut this short, to summarize it in one sentence, I would say this was a show that had three great matches in the middle, and then there was the rest.
Yes, it was kind of like a sandwich, you could say, of quality, I guess you could say. But I do want to say, this whole setup with Jingu Stadium, I thought everything about it was really good. Mm-hmm. You know, the entire aesthetic of the ring in the middle of the stadium itself, the sky. I think this is a great venue for wrestling. So that is one thing I will say, business or not, and who's to say how it'll turn out next year, but I think this is a great venue for wrestling, and it's great that they were able to run it, even with the terrible circumstances that kind of led to the draw being what it was. Still, just from an aesthetic perspective, I think this show looked awesome. Very major league, like on par with anything WWE or AEW could pull off, just from a worldwide perspective. And I thought that was a great. So that, to me, like you said, that might have been one of the highlights of the whole show, was just the aesthetic of it.
I mean, in the past, we've seen Ring of Honor, for example, run a baseball stadium. Remember when Global Force was still a thing? They ran several baseball stadiums, which looked horrible because nobody was there.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, maybe New Japan could set a precedent for other companies to try to run outdoor venues. Of course, not like in the fall or anything like that. But maybe in the future, during the summer, more promotions could do baseball shows, like just going from the aesthetic that New Japan did and try to maybe copy that.
Absolutely. I would love if more companies kind of took a risk on something like that. It's going to be hard because they're not really in position to run a stadium this big, but sure, if they can have some kind of outward arena, I think that would just help have something different, you know, change the venue up a little bit, because it's always so homogenized, I feel like, in pro-res, just in wrestling in general. I wish they would try to do something different, but I will say about this this stadium, I would just like to point out this fun fact. This home stadium is the stadium of the Tokyo Swallows NPB baseball team. Sadly, in last place right now in baseball. So that should tell you something. Maybe that was a bad omen on the show, perhaps considering how things maybe have turned out quality-wise. But I just want to hope that maybe the Swallows can get more of a bump from New Japan running their shows. Because, you know, that sort of mythology. I've talked about the curse of Colonel Sanders having a big effect on NPB baseball in the past, so I would like to say that there's a lot of superstitions in sports, and especially Japanese, so I'm hopeful that maybe New Japan can give them a little bit of a bump, even though they're actually not my team in NPB, but I still want them to not be in last, that they have the wrestling connection.
Sadly, on the last place on this show, Master Wato.
Yes, he's definitely last place in this whole promotion, I would say. Losing to Kanemaru in a bad match on top of it as well, with many, many botches. What was up with their finish specifically here? Because it looked like, I just want to point this out, I loved how Wato, he tried to go for like this kind of alley-oop maneuver. Which,
yes.
And so, but it was totally messed up. Like they totally didn't do it right. But then he pops up like, yeah, like he really completed this huge feat, like this big power move that he did. Like, yeah. And then what happens? Kanemaru rolls him up right away and pins him. It was wonderful.
This is a perfect example of how to not bring back a guy. Because, first of all, they gave them this goofy gimmick. Then they had him paired with the Suzuki-gun juniors, who in the first place are not the greatest among the New Japan juniors. Just from their positioning. You could argue from the wrestling, you could argue about that. But then He gets into the fight with these guys, gets a singles match with Yoshinobu Kanemaru, which, when you look at it on paper, you look at the story, the guy comes back, it's in a storyline with a stable that is composed of different juniors. You would think he would go through one junior, then wrestle the other, and win all of these matches. But now, he lost to Yoshinobu Kanemaru, and I feel that everything we said about Master Wato has come true when we first discussed his comeback at the Dominion show. He is a guy that they have packed for the mid-card. He is in a tag team with Ryosuke Taguchi for the junior tag title thing. He lost to Kanemaru here. There is nothing really that tells you anything different from what we said about Master Wato weeks ago.
Yeah, he was DOA. Really, right? As soon as he came out with that gimmick, it was all over. And him, this Kanemaru stuff, I don't know what they were thinking, but, like, you know, Doki and Kanemaru are, they're not good wrestlers to me, like, ultimately, either. So he hasn't even looked good. And his offense they make him do, he's not good at. So there's nothing good about these matches.
Yeah, and he was not able to shine in any way.
Yeah, exactly. They give him really bad opponents. They put him in a bad position with this gimmick, and they don't even let him do what he does best in-ring, which is as a fiery underdog babyface, not a martial arts master, or whatever he's trying to do now with pretty much anything he does. So I don't really understand it. But hey, like Wato, like mid-card, that's really generous. Like I kind of said this when we talked about it. I said he is the successor to Captain New Japan, and I think that's exactly what he is. Like, if you look at it, he was on the opening match on this card, lost to a guy who's never been pushed in New Japan, and probably never will be, outside of maybe a junior tag division, which, you know, who cares, to be honest. But, I don't know, maybe all they thought was, hey, maybe they'll give Wato a win over Kanemaru in the tag league, and so let's have Kanemaru beat him here. And they didn't even put any thought into it beyond that.
Yes, that is a horrible way to think about this dude you're bringing back, but
it sucks.
It may actually be their way of thinking.
I mean, like I said, this guy cannot be pushed as how he is. So I really am not even that upset about it.
No.
Yeah. So, you know, I can't even get that mad about it. But I feel bad for him because immediately when he walked out, he was a meme wrestler, and that's all he will ever be in New Japan as long as he has this gimmick. There needs to be a complete change of everything about him. Like, they can't keep anything. They can't keep the name. They can't keep the look. They can't keep the moveset. He needs to go away if they want to push him, which I don't think they do. So I think that this is his fate, unfortunately, in New Japan, is that he's going to be the opening match guy, have maybe a fun hot tag, like a guy that people can laugh at because he looks so stupid. And that's really all he adds to the card. Maybe he'll be a King of Pro Wrestling title contender.
I was just going to bring up that segue. Thank you.
Yeah. Great minds think alike, my God.
Wonderful. Oh, man. He could be in a, like, whatever, painting contest with Toru Yano.
Maybe so.
King of Pro Wrestling, the tournament. It was horrible.
This is my main event of the show today.
This match, the positioning at first and the way they did the match, they executed the match, told me right away that this concept, they immediately dropped it and they really don't want to push it any further anymore.
I think that may be for the best, considering how this tournament went.
Yes, maybe the best.
In all honesty, that handicap match that was somehow the main event of that show, of the qualifying match show...
At the main event, how did that happen?
I don't know. like I have no answers.
Wait. I do actually have the answer. And I had the answer when we talked about the Dominion show a couple of weeks back. Mm-hmm. But I brought it up in a different setting because I figured that Ghetto would be the manager for Evil. And I said that Ghetto wants to be the centerpiece of attention. And somehow, even though he's not in the main title picture as a manager, he still got the center of attention.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okada and Gato in the main event. Gato sees this as a main event feud, and I don't know why or what metrics he has to support that other than he just wants to, you know. The power of the pencil is strong in wrestling, Stringer.
It is.
But seriously, though, that match, in all honesty, that was one of the worst matches of the year in any company. Like, in my opinion, that was the worst New Japan match of the year. And I know we say that about a lot of like Bad Luck Fale, Wato.
You know, the thing about it is,
yeah,
I never expected it to be anything else than horrible.
And they still did not meet expectations. You know, like this was offensively bad, in my opinion. Like that to me is worse than any WWE match this year. Outside of maybe some Bray Wyatt matches.
Not seriously, though, they gave Yujiro a chance. He had the chance to be more than what he is in Bullet Club. They gave him the chance to be in the ring with Katsushika Okada, to be a singles guy once again. And maybe it was a test run for him to get a place in G1 Climax. But you can only say that this experiment was a complete failure.
Well, that's not the only one that you could say that about in the last couple of months. Mm. But this was bad. Like, this Yujiro push, it's a shame because when he was in the mid-card and not really getting pushed against guys like Goto and Juice, he had good matches. So I don't really know. Well, I mean, I do know. Like, this whole push sucks, but he didn't really step up either. Like, you can't really say he stepped up. But Okada is not a good wrestler right now in this point either. Like, I know some people are going to, like, ride and die with him. But he has not done a good job at all. It did not help Yujiro at all, and he was like equally to blame, in my opinion, for all of
that's
this. Because he's not
true.
Yeah, he's just not trying at all right now. And I mean, who can blame him? You know, like at the same time, you know, who can blame him for not trying in a stupid feud with Yujiro and Gato?
It's so telling of the way that New Japan thinks about tag team wrestling that they came up with this goofy concept of the King of Pro Wrestling Championship or tournament to keep Okada away from the main title picture when they could have just paired him with whomever, Yoshihashi, for example, to go after the tag team title. But no, top guys can't challenge for the tag team title, of course.
Let me just say this, because we didn't bring it up on the last episode and I wanted to and we forgot. But that six-man titles with Yoshihashi finally getting the first belt, that is a perfect like thing for the state of New Japan right now. Because to Yoshihashi, he made those six-man titles more important than the main titles are to Okada right now. Like the world title and the IC title. Like those stupid six-man titles were more important on that night because he actually gave a damn about him, which nobody else cares about titles in this company, apparently, besides Yoshihashi. He made those goofy titles more important than the world title is to Okada right now. So that tells me everything wrong with how they're booking right now. And this King of Pro Wrestling title, Okada, he's not putting in any effort. And there's no question about that. And like you said, it's terrible that they don't care about the tag team division, but that's something we knew already. You know, like this is hardly an epiphany.
No.
And just look at what we're doing right now. I mean, we'll get to the tag titles later, but it's the same two teams over and over. And, you know, just like they always do. It's just two different teams. It's like replace one team name with another team name. Last year it was Evil and Sonata and G.O.D. Now it's Taichi and Zack and Tanahashi and Ibushi. This King of Pro Wrestling title, I think it's perfect that Yano won it because ultimately, this title is like the 24/7 title in WWE. Like, just have a comedic title in the undercards. I have no problem with that. The problem is that they treat all of their other belts so terribly that having another comedic title is, or like another title that means really nothing, is not what this company needs right now. If they book their other titles better, like the tag titles, for instance, but I would say all of them, you know, pretty much. If they book them better, then this wouldn't be a problem. It's because they're lacking in so many areas that to have this comedic title in the undercard, it's terrible.
And it's what I mentioned before. I don't really expect New Japan to do this, and I don't really want New Japan to do this because this is half-assing a concept like this. They don't really put a full effort into it. I mean, the finals of the tournament was a four-way match, just a regular four-way match. I don't know. If you want to do something really out of the box, why don't you have a four-way ladder match in this stadium? And of course, I thought about, of course, where do you put the trophy? But why don't you have a drone circle over the ring and hold the drone that the wrestlers have to catch it from the drone? That would actually be out of the box and would be something different. But in the case of just like picking stipulations randomly, it seems, in some cases at least.
Or sometimes in Sonata's case, not picking stipulations at all.
Not picking stipulations at all. I mean, it's just, I don't expect this from New Japan, and I don't think New Japan knows how to do this. DDT knows how to do this. They should just not do something like this. I don't know. They can't. It seems like they can't.
Like I said, I never had any inclination that something like that was going to happen. And like you said, they don't really know how. And I don't think that would fit either, to be honest. They're trying to keep
things... What does fit? What fits with this tournament? Nothing really fits.
I mean, like I said, it's just a comedy thing for Yano. I mean, Yano, how does he fit in the G1? You know.
Yeah, but... that's another thing. Why didn't he present the concept then? Why did Okada present it?
That's a great question. I mean, it probably was Okada's idea, like in real life. So he's just like, screw it. You know, this is my idea. He shouldn't be a booker. I know that much. Okada has very little future in the front office. We've heard Tanahashi talk about wanting to be the president of wrestling or whatever in New Japan. Okada could never hold that position if these are his ideas.
Yeah.
At least they learned something then, if they ever had that idea to make Okada a booker. Mm-hmm. Now they know that they can't do that.
They should. Well, we said it in the middle portion of this show. We actually had some worthwhile matches. And it started out with a proper banger that has a rating of 8.40 on Cage Match based on 104 votes right now as we're recording this. And that got a lot of praise on Twitter. Minoru Suzuki defeated Shingo Takagi for the Never Open Weight Championship in 15 minutes, which is a breeze to say that a title match in New Japan goes 15 minutes. I love it. The next one even didn't last 15 minutes. So, Dylan, what did you think about the Never Open Weight title match?
This is a great match. You know, I love what they're doing with the Never title. I definitely think Shingo has been arguably the best in-ring performer, like never mind character work or anything like that, just in terms of in-ring. And he's done a good job with that too, like we saw before the pandemic. But in terms of just wrestling, I really think Shingo has been the top guy in the company. And Suzuki has really put together a sleeper year between this match and the Nagata match. Earlier on in the year, yep. I think you look at his run, Suzuki has really stepped up his game. And normally, I'm not really a big fan of Suzuki when he does the shenanigans and all the same bullcrap that we see from a million guys in New Japan. But if you give me this Suzuki, like we've seen against Nagata and Shingo, then you've got something. And I'm kind of into this Never title reign. I don't know about the title change or you know, specifically. I think a lot of people probably see this and think, well, maybe they have something big planned for Shingo. But I don't see that at all when it comes to that. I just feel like he needed to go into G1 strong, and they took it away from him. But it's not a big deal either way, because he's so good in the ring that they could do whatever they want with him. He's like the ultimate glue guy. I kind of like how Goto was for a long time, I feel like. No matter what you do with him, this guy could go. And even if you book him bad, he'll still be over because he wrestles so good. And that's kind of what I feel about Shingo here. So I had no problem with the result. Suzuki, hopefully he can bring more of this and less like his other Never title reign, which was very, very bad, in my opinion.
Yeah. Could also be another instance of some guy in New Japan losing one thing to win another thing, which happens a lot in this company. And I'm not tired to bring this up. It happens a lot.
It does. I just don't see what that would be right now.
Well, we'll see about that. But to the match itself, it was very impressive to see how Minoru Suzuki worked this one. Being 52 years old, he was able to hold his own against Shingo Takagi, a guy who has this heavyweight sprint style down like few others, and we know Suzuki was able to do that as well. That was very impressive to me, how they transitioned from one move to another. For example, when they did these transitions from Suzuki's Gottstall pile driver into a backdrop, and then from these moves to the heavy strikes. This was just great to see. I love the match as well. You know, Suzuki, as the winner, was great here, especially because he sent a message to the man up above for him, the Gotch style pile driver in the end. That was very sweet from him. Great moment. And the one thing that I didn't really like about the camera here, the camera setting, was Minoru Suzuki has one of the greatest drop kicks in professional wrestling. The best timed drop kick, in my opinion. He's able to like cut off anyone with his drop kick and make it look like he's hitting them in the face for real. But the camera here didn't really catch it well. So that was my one criticism of the match, but otherwise it was a great heavyweight strong style sprint, I'd say.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's really, it was a, not a, it's not like they rewrote the book or anything like that with this. It was just a very straight ahead good match, you know, that these had, which is great on, like, on this show. This is what you need. Like, this is the kind of match you need on the show, because it's very straightforward, basic stuff. The only thing I didn't like was some of Suzuki's facial expressions, the cartoonish stuff that he always does, which I'm never a big fan of, but it hardly took away from the match when the action was as good as this was. Just a very meat and potatoes kind of match, which, like I said, on a New Japan card, is desperately needed. I think both this and the next match provided that, that none of the other matches did.
Yes, and I think it's safe to say that after this IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship match, you can say that the injury layoff that Hiromu Takahashi had in early August was merely a storyline to give him an out to lose this title to Taiji Ishimori. They talked about this shoulder injury a lot in the last couple of weeks, and of course on this show too. Taiji Ishimori came out right away attacking the shoulder of Hiromu Takahashi, who came back in some instances, but was in danger of losing the match just 2 or 3 minutes into the contest. Then came back again, but ultimately it was too much for him. Taiji Ishimori made him tap out. And yeah, as I said, gave him this out while, like, they had to get the junior title off of Hiromu Takahashi when they want to put him into the G1 Climax. They need the title for the juniors, and Taiji Ishimori right now, in my opinion, is the perfect guy to transition it to. He can have a great run as a junior champion. Hiromu Takahashi has moved on from the juniors, so in my opinion, this was another good decision.
Everything about this was perfectly booked, I feel. Yes. Like, you know, it makes so much sense for Hiromu to come off of this big run. He comes across like one of the biggest stars in the company, but he's in this junior division, which really doesn't have anybody on that level. So what do? They give him a very simple out with the shoulder injury, and I thought the work here was phenomenal. I thought this was actually the best match on the night. Even with the Great Never title match, I thought this was even greater.
I agree. Yes.
Yes, exactly. Everything about it was awesome. And I got to say something, because I've seen this take a lot lately, especially going into this match, that Ishimori is this guy who lays eggs. And I would like to ask where that is outside of the fact that he's in a terrible division, in a terrible book division, that he never gets to do anything. Because if you remember his title reign, but was a great title reign. Remember that with Taguchi, Kushida,
yep,
Liger, Dragon Lee, all those matches were very good. It's just that they ended it a little early. Then he got injured for a while and for the Best of the Super Juniors that year. And unfortunately, after that, what can you do as a junior? Because you go right into the G1. If you're not in the title mix, you know, if you're not the number one or two junior, then you're kind of out to lunch. So I'm wondering where all of these bad Ishimori matches were that everyone's talking about. Oh, he's in a tag team with ELP? Like, how does that make it Ishimori's fault? I was not buying this at all. This talking point that was going on, and I think Ishimori totally proved me and other supporters of his right with this again, because this match, the only thing you could say about this match is that everyone's going to immediately compare it to their match 2 years ago, but this one was not as epic as that. You know, this was not, and it wasn't meant to be that way. But in terms of a pure work match, this was so smart, so well done, everything was crisp, it told a perfect story, and the ending totally made sense. Ishimori worked through his worked on his arm the whole match, worked on his arm the whole tour, and what happens? The crossface is the one that wins it, like targeting the arm. So I don't know how anybody couldn't like this match.
Yeah.
It had everything you want: action, great psychology, charisma from both men. I thought both of these guys are great workers, in my opinion, and I think it's great that they did a story like this. And for Hiromu, like you said, he's done all he can do with the juniors at this point. This is another little argument I've seen recently pop up that Hiromu should stay in the juniors, and I don't really understand it. I never really understood it, to be honest with you. I think I was probably one of the first people to really bang that hammer that he should probably move up. And my whole argument to that is, ultimately, if you have a top star, why would you keep him in the minor leagues? You know, like in the Premier League, that would be like if there was a Messi level player that somehow popped up in Norwich City and Liverpool offered him a contract. Why would you say, no, you can't leave Norwich? Like, that's what the juniors are. Like, this division is not good. Like, you know, it's never going to be what people want it to be. And I think that's really a main issue, is that ultimately, I know a lot of people are very good intentioned when they say that he needs to elevate the division, but no one person can do that. And that's never going to happen. Like, no matter who it is. So he needs to be with the stars, in my opinion, and because he is a star. Like, he's a top-level star, and I think he deserves any success that he has going forward. And I think in the G1, he has all the storyline reason in the world to be a top contender if they would like to go there. That's just my opinion. I don't know if you agree with that, but I really think that this guy has tons of potential already. Like, to me, when we saw that Evil match, as much as maybe we didn't like it, but when you look at Hiromu's performance in it and the way the fans took to him, that was a guy that's ready, in my opinion. Like, they don't need to wait on him. He's ready already. Like, that's just how I feel about Hiromu.
Man, this sports reference was one of the first one in the history of this entire show that I actually understood.
And did it not make perfect sense?
It did.
See, that's all I'm saying. I did that for you, Stringer, because you could say anything, maybe like a minor league team in the MLB, or you know, a team like the Jaguars in the NFL. You don't keep him around. I mean, hell, most of the players there just want to leave. But in the EPL, that was the best thing I could think of was Norwich. I apologize to any Norwich fans out there. I'm not trying to hate on you.
Shout out to Norwich City.
Be realistic is all I'm saying. But shout out to Norwich City for sure. If you're a Norwich fan, just pretend I said Crystal Palace, and the point still remains the same.
Yes, I agree that this was the best match on the show.
Yeah.
Storyline made total sense. Work was great here. It was a spectacular match in some ways too. So great work here. In the next match, the Dangerous Techers defended the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team title against the Golden Aces, Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kota Ibushi. And to talk about the storyline, they started this with Dangerous Techers getting the best of Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kota Ibushi in the New Japan Cup. Then it was all about Hiroshi Tanahashi maybe losing a step and Kota Ibushi being put off by that. And we thought that maybe Kota Ibushi would leave Tanahashi behind, would leave his ace behind, his god behind. But then Hiroshi Tanahashi got back into action and scored some wins for the team, which brought the two closer together again as challengers for the tag team title, and it seemed they were on the same page again. But now here, Dangerous Techers, they defeated the Golden Aces, I think definitively, when they pinned Hiroshi Tanahashi with the Zack Mephisto. Like, it's basically a Michinoku driver assisted by a super kick to the back. Not that, not a very convincing double team move, in my opinion. Not a lot of convincing double team moves in this tag team feud altogether with the Golden Blade. Yeah, the match itself, I thought it was very good. Zack Sabre and Taiji have become a great tag team. Tanahashi and Kota Ibushi try to work, becoming a better tag team. They certainly try, but it's not like they have this great tag team chemistry that you would need for a great tag team run. 60 minutes was a little long, in my opinion, for this one compared to the other matches, at least. But it told a story that is actually kind of smart, because they are telling the story of Tanahashi being the older guy who can't really put it together anymore. And unlike in the cases we've talked about, Yushin Liger and Yuji Nagata in the last years a lot, I can actually see it with Hiroshi Tanahashi because we've been talking about that for a long, long time, that he's not able to run the ropes anymore. He is really broken down to the point that you can't really believably have him be a top draw, a top star anymore.
Yeah, in terms of that, I agree with you. He's definitely very injured and broken down. I do have confidence when the G1 comes around, they'll probably put him in a big main event somewhere along the line, and he can deliver.
He will still work hard to put it together. Then he still has it in him that he fights against the pain when he is in these very important situations. But
yeah.
Just look at him in tag team matches.
Yeah, you know that's you're gonna only get a couple of those. You can't have him a consistent main eventer anymore. You know, like your point's totally true. But I do think he'll have at least one or two big matches in G1 because he's such a, never mind the physical part of it, he's such a smart guy when it comes to wrestling, like very high IQ in ring, and I think he's gonna be able to put it together and use every trick that he can in a match. And I don't even mean like a cheating or like bullcrap like a lot of guys, but I mean like in terms of actually wrestling and having good psychology, that the crowd is gonna buy into him. You know, there's gonna be some show in his hometown or something where the crowd goes nuts for him and that elevates the match and he's gonna have them wrapped around his finger. I think we can get a couple of those performances. But yeah, like the days of him being a world champion I think have to be over at this point. You know, you never know with New Japan. Maybe they have one more plan for him that we don't know about, you know, a year from now or something. And they just feel like, hey, we have this one bullet left in the chamber. I can't completely write that off, but
no.
I do agree with you, though. Like, you know, in all likelihood, I think his time is done as that kind of guy. And I think ultimately this whole storyline with the tag league, or not the league, but their tag feud with the Dangerous Techers was just a way to give these guys something to do until the G1 and just waste time. to be honest, I didn't think this was a great match. In all honesty, they're a fine team. Like it was a fine match, but it wasn't anything special. And I think it's interesting that you said that about it being too long because this was half the length of last month's tag match between these two.
I edit compared to the other matches that we talked about.
Well, even last month's match was twice as long, so what does that say about that one?
It was much too long.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought they were both okay. Like even with the length on the first match, I think they were both pretty much fine 5 or 6 out of 10 level matches. Like, nothing too crazy, but nothing bad either. You know, I don't think that this was a bad match at all, and I think Taichi and Zach are a good team. You know, they work well together, you know, in terms of charisma and... Yeah, the tag moves themselves aren't that great, but what can you do? It's Taichi, so a lot of his moves aren't that great.
What do you think about the story of Tanahashi going down the card? I mean, they really made it obvious to you, and after all, this has been the guy that was the ace for a long time, and he was the guy that has been on top basically for the entirety of this new generation of New Japan fans. And what did you think about the way how they portrayed that? I mean, that has to leave the Hiroshi Tanahashi fans with a very sad, if you can say that, sad taste in their mouth. Is that something you can say? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I think ever since he won the title and he lost it to Jay, like that month later, I think that was the real gut punch, like for the Tanahashi fans. It's like he had this tremendous moment and then lost it right away. It really felt like the end was there. Like it made it feel like kind of like when Nakanishi won the title, you know, for that month. It's like, okay, he's been the ace, and we think we can get one big draw out of him left, and he got it, and then that was it. Like, you know, it doesn't feel like he's on top of the card anymore, and it hasn't felt like that since then, in my opinion. But they are telling this story. You know, like I said, I don't think you can completely discount that he makes one final run, you know, because people have written him off years ago, you know, when it comes to his run on top, and somehow or another, he found his way back. So I don't think you can completely write it off, but it definitely feels like they're phasing him out to where he's going to be, in the role of a Nagata or a Kojima or a Liger, you know, in his last years. I feel like that is his future. And like I said, maybe he has one more in the next year or so, but after that, he's finished in his top role. And even this, he's, like you said, just look at him in these tag matches. He's hanging on by a thread, you know? I think it would be a smart thing to kind of phase him down. It sucks for the fans who have been there for him, for, like you said, the entirety of their big boom. But he's just getting older, and I think everybody's just going to have to accept that. And even me, I'm a big fan of his, even compared to a lot of the main eventers that are more popular, especially in America, I've always really rode by him as one of the top guys. But I do accept it at this point because he's really broken down. You can see it in the matches. Like you said, it's not like a Nagata situation where he's still a great worker. Tanahashi's just... let's just hope he can have one or two big matches in the G1. And if he does that, then he's fulfilled his purpose, even if he's broken down every other time of the year, it seems like.
Yeah, absolutely. So that brings us to the main title, the double title. And it seems to me that there is a disconnect between two fan camps here. That is, on one side, you could maybe say the regular New Japan fan or the general New Japan fan. And on the other side, there's the Los Ingobernables fans. Because when I'm reading what the Los Ingobernables fans are saying, they really are into this title picture, this title feud, and we're really celebrating Naito to win back the championship. And on the other hand, there is the quote-unquote general New Japan fan. I don't really have any strong feelings about this, Dylan. And New Japan as a whole, in the last couple of months, they haven't really shown me that they are able to put together a compelling main event story, unless you're really into this certain group. And in a way, it is very strange for me, as much like with the tag title, this double title from the get-go. Of course, there was this pandemic in between, and they probably would have told some different stories with some different challenges. But as it is right now, the double title is a thing that has been fought out between LIJ and former LIJ members. And it's hard for me to understand the thinking behind that no other wrestler is even saying they want to challenge for that championship. And it's even worse. We talked about it. Okada says he doesn't want anything to do with the title. Yeah, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, I mean, why would you want a title with the IC title involved, you know? And that was basically his comment when he made it. Yes. He was like, yeah, like the title was great, but then they had this double title, and it's like, I don't want that, you know? I really completely agree with what you said at the top. Depending on you, on how into LIJ you are, I think you're going to have a lot different perspective on this.
Absolutely.
Because clearly that's who this is all for and who have really appreciated it. If you just watch it as a wrestling match, there's been nothing good about these last 2 months. Like, ultimately, with this whole double title situation with Evil as the champion turning into the Bullet Club version of himself, it really hasn't worked. And I honestly don't think to most people he's really been solidified as a main eventer. If anything, this really reminds me of what they did with Jay. Like, you know, like he had this kind of lame title reign that was like 1 or 2 months. He lost it right away, and it feels like he has not really been able to gain anything from it. And I feel like Evil's the same way. In fact, it's kind of like they just turned him into Jay White while Jay was away.
They did.
And we don't need one Jay White.
Like, the thing is, they turned Kenny Omega into Jay White, or vice versa, basically.
Yeah, or Jay into Omega, just with more like, well, they had him kind of doing his title run that Omega claims, but the match style was different than Omega. Omega didn't have all this interference and stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that's the problem. Like, I get that Evil's not a great worker. Like, I think we've all figured that out now. Any kind of bloom on his rose has been long since poisoned at this point. But you can't blame them for this. Like, nobody can make this work. Like, the style of matches they're doing with Togo. How many run-ins were there? Sonata running out with his sandals or whatever he had on. Like, what was that?
You know,
like, what was that?
That is the one, or the crucial thing about this match is I could not enjoy this because I was just sitting here and waiting for all the run-ins to happen. Because you know what you're getting. And we said it before when Evil won the championship, you're going to get these kind of title matches. And I couldn't even like really get into the first, whatever it was, half of the match before the interferences happened, because I knew everything that they did before would just be not important anymore.
I also love how, you know, during the start point of this match was Togo interfering a lot. So then we get all these run-ins with Sonata and Bushi. Where was this a month ago? Like, their story is that they respect the title so much that they refuse to run in, that they've tried to lie and make up and pull out of their ass. And now that doesn't matter. Now it's okay to run in. Now we have to respect the title and even things up. But we couldn't do it for Hiromu. We could do that the first match a month ago, and we could have avoided all of this bullcrap. But no, now is the time to run in. It's not even logical. Like, there's the storyline they're telling.
No. And I want to make a fashion complaint. Where has Dick Togo's white suit gone? I mean, he still has the pants. But why is he wearing a cut-off black shirt to this suit pants?
And the kind of, like, general cap that he has on as well. Just a terrible fashion statement.
Terrible fashion look. The look he had at first with his white suit was great. This one, no.
Yeah, I wish they'd let him wrestle instead of being a manager.
Another thing. When we talked about the juniors, they didn't even bring up the Best of the Super Junior anymore, did they?
No, that looks like it may be that this division that needs to be elevated and is right on the verge of that is not even going to get a tournament this year, it looks like. Except for the tag title tournament, of course.
Yeah,
the wonderful four-team tournament that we're going to have. What a division. But
Dylan, about the match, what did you think about it?
Oh, it was terrible. There was nothing redeeming. Yes. To me, though, here's the thing. Like, even with all the interferences, and I said that Evil can't make this work, but if there were no interferences, this would still be a bad match. Like, they were sloppy. These two don't have good chemistry against each other. And I don't have any interest in seeing them wrestle ever again under any circumstances. If Evil's in LIJ, if Naito joins Bullet Club, if Evil joins Bullet Club, if they're both babyfaces, I don't want to see them. They don't wrestle good together. And I don't think either one of them are very good in the ring, to be very blunt about it at this point. Naito, of course, has all the injuries, and he's always going to be over. So he doesn't have to be even good. But like I said, I don't think Evil's gained anything from this title reign, and I don't think any of his matches have been good. And I think that's really all there is to say about it. But like I said, there was a lot of sloppy stuff going on. Well, hey, what's with this? This is a total point on Naito here, not Evil, but this new move he's come up with, this flipping Destino, it sucks. like who gave him permission to complete this move or bring in this move?
In the first couple of matches he did it, it worked, but this one looked horrible. The entire match was put together by one move after another. I didn't really... I don't know, maybe I didn't see it, but to me it was just a match that was composed of moves. Then there was this ref bump, and I mean, you can just say that communication was bad.
Oh, the worst ref bump ever.
Yeah, communication was so bad. Okay, that was very unfortunate that happened. But it very much fit the match, in my opinion,
and
how horrible it was. This was not a good look for the stadium show.
No. Here's the thing. To LIJ fans, it's not going to matter because they got a really cool post-match with the fireworks going off,
yes.
Naito with the titles. Like, that's what everyone's going to remember. They're not going to remember this totally shitty match that happened before it. But to me, that's what I care about more than the LIJ dynamics. I want to see Hiromu and Shingo get pushed, and Naito is not doing it for me right now. I kind of bought into him as champion at the Tokyo Dome and getting his little run, but ever since then, you could see that he's hurt. You could see that he's not having great matches, to say the least, And, you know, this stuff with Evil, as I said, what did this all accomplish at the end of the day, besides popping LIJ fans to see Naito get the title back again? What did this accomplish for Evil? Because I don't buy him as a main eventer. Maybe I'm wrong or too negative, but I don't think he's really gained any status at all, other than now
he gets to have his... I mean, he hasn't proven that he can do it on his own.
No. Like, the only thing he has
as you mentioned, yeah. The only thing that he has proved is that he can do it when he gets help from three other guys. But whenever the numbers are even, he will lose the match.
Yeah. Like, I mean, before that in the New Japan Cup, he kicked people in the balls a lot.
Yeah.
So that he proved that he could do that. But yeah, his G1 is going to be interesting, at least. And I think that I'm trying to imagine a world where, let's just say, he lost in the second round or something. Like I think probably a lot of people might have thought that. And he was just Evil in LIJ. Would he have as much interest as he does now? Probably not, but I don't think it's good. Like, you know, I think the attention on him is more negative than good, because I think a lot of people have not liked this run at all. And, you know, the draw on the show was what it was. We talked about it at the end of the show. It wasn't a sellout, and neither was it. None of his matches have been sellouts, and with Evil on top. Whether it was Okada, which I thought was a really disappointing number, the Naito match was better, but still not a sellout, and now this. So I do think that there is something to be said for that, and maybe how he's not connecting to a larger group of fans. You know, get out of the bubble of the LIJ fans. If you look at the entire group, I don't think he's really connected or gained a lot, unfortunately. And, you know, like you said, you know, I know he's had some good matches in the past, and he seemed like he was a top prospect at one point. But to me, I just feel like this is going to be kind of a black mark on him, you know, because people are always going to remember this. The next time he does get into the G1, gets a main event push or anything like that, they're going to remember all of these performances and all of the bad storylines and everything that has happened so far. And I just think it's a shame that they've gone this route when they could have just kept the title on Naito. What harm would that have done, I feel like?
I can't add anything to that, seriously.
I understand, man, but this was a very, very up and down show.
Yeah, there are going to be some more shows this coming weekend. You mentioned it. The IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team title is up for grabs now. Sho has vacated the championship because Yo can't wrestle, and they've put together this horrible looking tournament.
Yes.
Ryusuke Taguchi and Master Wato, El Desperado and Yoshinobu Kanemaru, Hiromu Takahashi and Bushi, Taichi Ishimori, and Gedo. What the fuck?
Why couldn't it have been Togo and Ishimori?
I have no idea.
See, this is what I said when Togo came in. Everyone was so excited.
Yeah, I know.
I will not get excited about this because I know that what's going to happen. And they freaking proved me right, and I hate it because I want to see Ishimori and Togo as a team. I can get into that. That might make these titles worth something.
The best case scenario of this is just El Desperado and Yoshinobu Kanemaru winning the championship and just holding it hostage and never defending it ever again.
No, the best case scenario is that Hiromu lost the junior title to be moved to his junior tag team championship. Never mind the G1, never mind the...
And Master Wato can finally get his big win over Hiromu Takahashi.
Yes, that could happen, you never know. But that's what I want to see. I want to see Hiromu move from... not to heavyweight. I want him moved to the junior tag team title scene, which is what some people would like to see, apparently, this company.
There is a silver lining, though, for you, Dylan. Dick Togo is actually going to wrestle twice on this tour.
Oh, cool.
On September 8th. He's in the main event, actually. Tetsuya Naito and Sanada against Evil and Dick Togo.
Wonderful. That's three wrestlers I love surrounding him.
September 9, he's in a six-man tag. So, yeah, that is the tournament. Why is there even still a junior heavyweight tag team title?
Yeah, I was just about to ask that. like literally, that's exactly what I was going to ask you, was why is this division existing at this point? There's no purpose to it. They don't have enough guys. They don't want to use outsiders for whatever reason. But all I can say is it's another title to have. You can put it on a guy's Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
They were a champion. Like, that's all these titles mean.
Yeah. It just
that's all I got to say about it. That's these titles are worthless.
And that's like everything that we have for New Japan. You know, yeah. They have this tour that's ending on September 11 next week. And we don't even have names for the G1 Climax as of yet, as of today that we're recording this. And this tournament is starting on September 19.
Do you think that they're trying to scramble to get somebody, like an outsider or something, to kind of make this worthwhile? Because I think I would like to believe that they're cognizant to that. Maybe this evil push has not really done gangbusters in terms of fan interest. Maybe they want to have a big name of some sort to put in there. But, I mean, that's just speculation on my part. Do you think that's a possibility, is all I'm asking?
It would be unlike what New Japan usually does, because Ghetto usually has everything penciled out so far in advance. But, of course, in this day and age, in 2020, we can't really plan anything. So maybe they'll reach for someone, because who would have expected Dick Togo to come in 2 months ago?
Yeah, exactly. We kind of had this conversation at the
Dick
time.
Dick Togo was winning the G1 Climax.
I would love that if that happened, but I'm a little skeptical of that. But I do think that that's a possibility for why they're dragging this out so much, because I can't understand the logic otherwise of why they haven't announced anything yet. Jingu would have been the perfect place with all the biggest show you're going to have for the rest of the year.
I was fully expecting that they would announce something on that show.
Yeah, so that's really the only speculation answer I could come up with, is that they are trying to negotiate with somebody or get someone from another company, somebody that nobody expects to bring in. And I don't know, I don't have any inside information on that. That's just the only thing I could think of for why they didn't announce it yet. And, you know, otherwise, you know, if we just have a normal G1 with the guys we've got now, I don't know how much interest there's going to be in that, because Evil as now is in this gimmick. I think his fan interest has really dropped, if anything, ever since he left LIJ. And the normal cast of characters, Okada doesn't even want the title, but somehow I'm sure he'll find his way into G1 when it comes to it. Maybe that could be his story. He could say, if I win the G1, I'm challenging for the King of Pro Wrestling title and making it a main event title.
let's just keep our speculations for the G1 Climax.
Yes.
For the eventual show we'll do when we talk about the lineups. When we'll eventually get them.
Yeah, nobody knows when, but we will do a show, I promise, to the listeners out there. When it happens, we'll be there for you.
Absolutely. So much for New Japan now. Moving on from New Japan, I want to talk about Big Japan Pro Wrestling next, because they also had two big shows, actually, this past weekend. They said goodbye to Yokohama Bunka Gymnasium. They wanted to have Tatsumi Fujinami in the main event of the final match in Yokohama Bunka Gymnasium, one of the guys that is tied to the venue because of the great main event in 1988 against Antonio Inoki. And, of course, Fujinami is still wrestling to this day, but he was injured, so he couldn't be there. Big Japan, the show on Saturday, last Buntai at BJW, was live. They drew 850 fans to Yokohama Bunka Gymnasium, and in my opinion, it was a horrible look in the time of a pandemic to have the fans cramped around ringside and not spread out throughout the venue that is just huge for a company for the size of Big Japan. To me, that was a bad look.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Big Japan in the pandemic is kind of a questionable cause in and of itself. Mm-hmm. I think if you look at how they've handled things, and I think this is another case of that.
Absolutely. I mean, this show, in my opinion, it was good. I enjoyed it. Watching it live was pretty cool. The main takeaway that I have from this is the Strong World Heavyweight title, Daichi Hashimoto defended against Shigeyori Irie in 19 minutes. Another case that I thought was a very good title defense by Daichi Hashimoto. I kind of thought that maybe Irie would be winning the title, but Daichi Hashimoto has given out the clear idea that he wants to be known as Mr. Strong in comparison to his dad, Mr. IWGP. So he defeated Shigeyori Irie with the Rising DDT in a very good match. I thought Irie brought it here. I really loved how he worked the match, attacking Daichi Hashimoto, and Hashimoto had to work from under. He regained control with a very nice looking transition from the he did not regain control, but he was caught by Irie when he was going for him, I think for a Shining Wizard or something, was jumping. Irie caught him with the TAS mission out of nowhere. Oh, it was the spinning wheel kick. That was it. Irie caught him out of midair into the TAS mission. That, in my opinion, looked very good. In the end, decisive finish, even though it kind of came out of nowhere. But I thought the match itself was very good.
Yeah, a good match. I definitely agree with you there. And another one. Daishi's had a lot of good matches this year.
Yes.
I honestly was more impressed with Irie, though, I have to say. Not to be negative, I thought Daishi did fine, but I thought Irie really showed out here and brought it, as he usually does. I think he's a very talented guy, obviously. But, you know, I thought for a 19-minute strong title match, this was another good chunk, and a good title reign. I have to give Daishi credit. I was never a big fan of his overall, and I still don't think he's a great worker. You know, I think a lot of these guys are guys like Irie, Okabayashi, and stuff like that, which I think have really delivered and elevated him. But he's definitely held his end of the bargain. You can't really criticize him too much. I really liked it, and I thought it was a fine way to end the Big Japan Strong World title era at Yokohama Bunka. And yeah, like I said, it was a good match. I agree with everything you said about it pretty much. And hopefully Irie can get some more run elsewhere, and Daichi's reign continues.
In the deathmatch heavyweight title scene, though, we're the new champion in Minoru Fujita, a trueborn to Big Japan Pro Wrestling, who has won the title for the first time now in his career, and actually just a couple of years ago transitioned to become more of a deathmatch wrestler. I don't think that he has done that before in his career. So he defeated Ryuji Ito for the title, and it seems like they want to move on from the guys like Ryuji Ito and Abdullah Kobayashi on top, because Minoru Fujita kind of called out the younger guys to challenge him. And it's really needed, because when you saw Ryuji Ito in this match, the guy can't do anything more. And who can blame him? He has been doing this death matches for years and years. In my opinion, he should have been broken down years ago. And it is impressive to see that he's still able to do what he is able to do, which is not a lot, but still, though, he should be broken down much more, is my point here. But the finish here, it was just a bad idea to do this with Ryuji Ito in this circumstances and in this condition. Minoru Fujita and Isami Kodaka, these guys somehow have brought up the idea that the Samson Clutch is now a finishing move. And he wanted to do the Samson Clutch with Ryuji Ito, but it looked very bad, and Ito couldn't do the rollover to land right in the clutch. It was a bad finish, and it caught me off guard because I wasn't expecting the finish at that point in the match. So good for Minoru Fujita, and Big Japan really needs to transition Ryuji Ito down the card.
Yeah, we were talking about Tanahashi being broken down earlier. Ito is at a whole different level, and he has been broken down for years now, to be honest, by a normal standard. But like you said, he's kind of defied the odds by even being in this shape at this point, you know. So I kind of agree with you, but also he hasn't been good for a while now, in my book. You know, and this guy, he was the king of death matches when I was starting to watch Japanese wrestling. Like, he was the guy for the deathmatch world. So he obviously is very important to the company. So I had no problem with him winning the title. In these crazy matches, it's not like you have to be, you know, super in shape or anything like that. You know, this whole match was like a huge train wreck to me, like, to be honest with you. There was some crazy moments. I will say that. And to have Fujita win, this is somebody you would expect to be kind of like a filler defense, at least I think most people felt that way.
Yep.
But he ended up getting the win here in a weird, like a completely weird finish that really didn't work at all. But I don't know. This, like I said, this match was a disaster, but I can see why, like, if you're a deathmatch fan, you might have liked it. Because it was kind of interesting. It wasn't like a boring match. It was just kind of a crazy, weird match. And even with Ito being broken down, I think they were able to get around that with a lot of the stuff with the glass that they had there. You know, it felt like nearly when they landed on the glass, like, build-up, the tower or whatever they had, that if you notice, Fujita landed right on his neck on top of it, which I thought was very dangerous. But, you know, that's what you do in these hardcore matches, these death matches. You have to go all out, and he did do that. I think they both did that to the best of their abilities. Fujita himself is not exactly a work rate master, especially in 2020. So.
Yeah, he's been... When did he debut? I think he in the 90s, didn't he? Yeah, 97.
How crazy is that?
Wow. Man.
Yeah, it was a crazy ass match. So like if you're a fan of that style, then you'll probably enjoy this. But it was not a good match from like a wrestling point of view. Even by a deathmatch standards, it wasn't a good match.
No. You had a much better deathmatch with Yaki Numasawa and Jun Kazai against Toshiyuki Sakuda and Yuki Ishikawa. These two, Sakuda and Ishikawa, are really the ones that they should focus on coming in the future here. They should challenge Miho Fujita for the title. So that was a good death match, in my opinion.
Numazawa was another one of these guys that was like really big back then.
Yes.
And and he's still kicking in these crazy-ass death matches.
Yes. They had another death match on this card with Drew Parker, Masaya Takahashi, and Takumi Tsukamoto against Isamu Kodaka, Yuko Miyamoto, and Kankuro Hoshino. Abdullah Kobayashi was in a regular six-man tag team match down the card here. So that was the deathmatch portion. I thought this was all right. But Dylan, the main takeaway of the mid-card, of course, is Tatsuhiko Yoshino actually winning something.
Unbelievable. But that's what we saw. And it looks like he'll be getting a junior title shot next, as they had this tournament to determine the number one contender, and he got the win over Shinobu here. And I can't wait to see that match against Aoki and Yoshino.
Yeah. I thought this was a good match, 14 minutes. They told a good story there with Yoshino against Shinobu. He finally wanted to get the big win. It looked like Shinobu could be getting the win, but the athlete German suplex finally sealed the deal for Yoshino. I like that. I like that they are actually trying to do something in the junior division.
Yeah, I think it's cool that they're doing this. And they had a good story with Shinobu being the first junior champion when they brought the belt back, that it makes more sense for him to get the title shot against kind of like the supernova of the division right now with Aoki, who's had a great title reign. And, everybody, I think, has really been impressed by him. But instead, they went with Yoshino, which I think will be an even better match. If they let Yoshino go all out and they have a match to their abilities, I think that could be a really sleeper match of the month style of match.
It could be. Another cool match in the midcard was Kumarashi, Ryota Hama, and Yasufumi Nakanoe against Daisuke Sekimoto, Yuji Okabayashi, and Akira Yodo. The Hosses here were on the loose. And I don't know about you, but I think that Kumarashi is much more impressive in Big Japan than he is in All Japan. I think he just has more confidence in this scenario, in this circumstance with Big Japan, because here he is one of the bigger guys. In All Japan, he of course is like big in the sense of he's built like a tank, but he's not the tallest. In All Japan, there are people that are just much taller than him, that kind of tower over him, and maybe that takes away some of the confidence that he needs. But here, with the likes of Yodo, Sekimoto, Nakanoe, Okabayashi, and even Ryota Hama, he looks like a true threat to the strong division, and I think that that boosts his self-confidence.
I also think that in Big Japan, he gets to be like one of the top people. He got to be the star of his team, rather in All Japan, where he's always like a second fiddle to Ashino. Yeah, exactly. So I think he got to have a lot more confidence there and really do his thing rather than kind of fulfill this sidekick role that he has there. And I think he works a lot better in Big Japan. But I agree with you. I think everybody did a good job. I was actually really impressed with Nakanoue as well. I thought he did a great job in his role. Obviously, the strong BJ team in Hyodo, those guys are all great. But I thought the other guys, you know, I think on paper, they're not as strong, but I think they really held up their end of the bargain. I thought this was kind of an underrated match. I thought it was a good match on the mid-card.
Yeah, definitely. Those six-man tags in the strong division, you should always check them out because there is always some great interactions with the young guys and Okabayashi whenever they're facing off, and even still Daisuke Sekimoto. They always bring a lot of energy to those matches. The entire junior division, though, was stuck in another six-man with Jiro Ikemen Kuroshio, which actually was fine, but nothing really to talk about.
Yeah, it was kind of a meaningless junior match. Like, a kind of a spotlight for Jiro to give, you know, he was like the presented as the big star in this match, and, you know, it's whatever. Like, pretty much, it was a fine match.
I did not see the first match. I only tuned in to see the Brahman Brothers, of course. That's my thing. Ryuichi Kawakami was very funny in this situation. Once again, he showed his comedic talent that we know he has from his Basara run as Trans M Ryuichi. So this was a fine way for them to get on the card. But I really can't wait to see the final Goodbye Yokohama Buntai show that was on Sunday, that is going to air this coming weekend with the great Minoru Suzuki against Takuya Nomura match. I already saw some highlights of the match. It should be a really cool match. And they had some assistance from DDT, from Ice Ribbon, Sendai Girls, 2AW, Basara, 666, 01. Masato Tanaka and Mamoru Sasaki were in the tag team against Hideyoshi Kamitani and Leatherface, which is great. Shuji Ishikawa was there, Koei Sato, Tetsuya Endo. It was a great get-together to say sayonara to Yokohama Bunka, and I think that was a great way to go out. And of course, Daichi Hashimoto scored the final pinfall in Yokohama Bunka Gymnasium.
Mr. Strong stands tall. Who else would it be?
Who else?
Yeah. I think the match everyone's looking forward to is the Suzuki and Nomura match, because it was kind of random. They announced this, like, very close to the actual event itself. I wonder why they didn't promote it more.
I mean, the only reason that I can come up with is basically the same thing that you, the same idea that you had with New Japan, that they just didn't finalize the deal earlier. Because why wouldn't you promote that?
Yeah, like, I think having a New Japan guy on the show, maybe not technically, but, you know.
Oh, he had the NEVER title with him.
Yeah, exactly. A New Japan guy. Like, ultimately, having him on the show would have been a deal. Like, you know, they could have drawn extra people with that. But, you know, that's still going to be a great match, and I'm really happy that they're doing something with Nomura. That tag match last month with the Astronauts winning the title was an incredible match, I thought. You know, and a great moment. If you followed their story of Nomura's, all the, you know, we think he should be the guy, but they never really push him. Like, to finally get that big win and now have this match, it feels like Big Japan, they're finally doing things with guys, you know, whether the junior division or Nomura.
And from the end of July until now, Big Japan really has been putting on strong shows. You mentioned the August 10 show with the tag team title in the main event. This show here on the 29th was good, in my opinion. We still have to see the August 30 show. Their tag league is starting. So, man, Big Japan is still living. That is the main thing that we should talk about. After April, where it looked like they would be the first company closing down, they are still going on and they are making moves. And it's great to see. Great to see for them that they didn't go down and that they're actually making some noise in the pro wrestling scene.
If you could say one thing about everybody, whether it's Big Japan or 01, these companies have a resilience to going out of business, and they've proven it this year.
Yeah, if they die in 2021, what was all this for?
Yeah, that'll be very sad if that happens.
Yes, so that is Big Japan Pro Wrestling. On the same day that they said goodbye to Yokohama Bunka, All Japan Pro Wrestling ran a very early Kurikan Hall show, which is why I didn't watch it live. It started at 4:30 in the morning at my time zone. But for you, Dylan, I think it was perfect.
Yeah, like, you know, this is something that it's like 10 o'clock at night or something like that when it started. And they, All Japan's had a weird month, kind of, I feel like, with some things, but a good one too, because you had the big Aoki show earlier in the month, which was very emotional, had a great tag match. A week later, it's like once a week they're coming out with these shows. And a week later, they had the Sato versus Ashino match, which I thought was completely awesome.
It was a great, great match, of course. Yes.
Yeah, like, I thought that was an incredible technical match. As always, like, those are kind of like my guys, but I think pretty much anybody can enjoy that match. And now on this show, you had some really interesting guys up and down the card. You know, they started off with the Aoyagi brothers teaming together. They took on Francesco Akira and Rising Hayato, a part of Kento's faction, the Kento, Jiro, Akira, and Hayato adventure team.
Rising Adventure.
Yeah, the Rising Adventure. Okay, sure. But it was pretty cool. Aoyagi, I thought Yuma himself, I really think he's kind of been lost, so I really hope that they could do something with him in the Champion Carnival. But his brother...
Still holding on to my Dark Horse theory there.
I hope you're right, man. Like I said, he's so good. Like, do something with him. But also, his brother is becoming a talent. I feel like, yeah. Like, I'm kind of getting into this guy in terms of a high flyer, which is something that all Japan can always use. And I think he's doing a great job of standing out. And he's somebody that, you know, last year it felt like he was kind of falling behind the other guys. But now I think he's really forming his own niche in the company.
It's so great to see that all of these three guys in Hokuto Omori, Dan Tamura, and Atsuki Aoyagi, they have found their role within All Japan Pro Wrestling. And all of them at one point have been struggling to find that role. I mean, just look at what we said about Dan Tamura at the beginning of the year. And we've also talked about Atsuki Aoyagi in a similar way, as you just mentioned. Hokuto Omori, of course, was a different animal. He was always going to be great. Has found his role as the first of this group. Dan Tamura we'll talk about, but Atsuki Aoyagi, as you mentioned, he's going to be the high flyer, and they really need one. His moonsault, both the standing version and the one from the top rope, they already look very gorgeous.
Yeah. I mean,
great stuff there. Yes, graceful is the right word here. So Atsuki Aoyagi, I just hope they continue to find a role for him, and maybe he'll be the one who could challenge for the junior title in 6 months down the road.
Yeah, I do wonder if this could be a permanent team down the road when Aoyagi gets a little bit more experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That may be where they see these guys, the Aoyagi brothers teaming together. But I still hope that you're right about the Dark Horse deal in the Champion Carnival. He really deserves it, but we'll see what happens. And I still think that would be a fine spot. I think they could be a potentially great team in the future if that is a plan. The second match you had, the return of Ryoji Sai, which I know everyone... Yes.
The most baffling thing on this entire show.
Oh, the Okada and Yoshitatsu thing.
No, the thing that the guy who hasn't been in All Japan since the end of March just pins Yusuke Okada.
Yeah.
Dylan.
You can't job out Carbel Ito, Striga. We have to protect him.
Of course you can't. But seriously, though, the only thing that I can imagine at this stage is that Okada did something that they are punishing him for.
Yeah, this sucks. Like, this whole thing sucks. I've been down this road before. I love him and think he could be a top star, but clearly that is not in the cards anytime soon in this company, unfortunately.
No, that's not going to happen.
I mean, he is like bottom of the barrel on the card right now. Like, the guy who's too stupid to team with Yoshitatsu, like, too bad, that's kind of his role right now. And that's
too stupid to team with anyone.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he's like a disappointment to Yoshitatsu. And, like, that tells you all you need to know when it comes to his push, unfortunately. It's a shame, man. He's still so talented. He's got a great look. I'm coming around on the yellow, I will admit that, but I do think he's just, like, I think his talent, he's got charisma, he stands out, he knows wrestling, he has a very high wrestling IQ. I don't know why they don't do more with him, but it feels like they've pegged him, and it's not in a good way, unfortunately, and he's going to have to fight his way out of this, and I don't know how, because like you said, maybe he's got heat with somebody we don't know about, but that's the only thing, like you said.
It's the only explanation that makes sense.
It's not his talent. We know that. No. We know he's ready. He deserves it. I don't know why they don't do more with him, but, you know, it is what it is. It's just they're not booking him well. That's all there is to it, and it's a shame. But, yeah, I completely agree with you on that.
At least they are trying to book the Enforce better now. Yep. They brought in Koji Doi as the replacement for Yusuke Kodama now. Koji Doi is now the newest member of the Enforce, and he looked good in this 8-man tag. He got to shine, of course, to do his moves that he does well, won the match with a crushing lariat, against Mensore. So I just hope that with Koji Doi back, they A, have another guy that they can use for singles, but more importantly, they do really need a new tag team to challenge for the world tag team title, and I think that is going to happen with him and Kuma Arashi.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm just glad that All Japan has finally brought him in, because he is too good to be just on these smaller shows. I mean, I love Asuka Pro. I watched their shows this past weekend, and Asuka Pro is a really cool flashback to the times of Wrestling New Classic, and basically a reunion of Wrestle One with all the guys wrestling there. But Koji Doi, all these guys, they really need this bigger platform, and they should be on a bigger stage than Asuka Pro. So I hope that Koji Doi is able to put it together in All Japan, because when he had the chances to be a singles wrestler, Wrestle One was kind of bland. And he needs to really find a way to become, I don't know if there is a way to become more charismatic, but he needs something to stand out more.
Even his look is super basic when you look at him. He's not, like you said, he's just not a flashy guy, ultimately. I think a tag role is perfect for him and Kuma as well. I think that they're a great team. Unfortunately, this, like, if you actually followed the Wrestle One, him joining in fonts is really stupid. it makes no sense at all. But you know, it's
who is following Wrestle One?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Like, you know, it doesn't matter at all, really. But him and Kuma as a team, I think, could be a really great benefit to All Japan's division, and I think those guys could help raise each other's game. Because I think they both could use a little bit of seasoning. But Doi, he's had some impressive matches in Wrestle 1, especially in the tag division, when he got to have some big spotlight moments. But I actually didn't think this was a great debut for him, because he was facing all these old guys, and he didn't really get to like blow up as much as he could have. Although I will say the lariat at the end was really good on Mensah Ray. But when he's facing these old guys, and when any of the infants, I didn't think it was a great match or a great debut. I hope they have something better planned for him next go round.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see about that.
No offense to the old guys, but
you know. It's always great to hear the danger zone.
Yeah.
Well, Jake Lee, Dylan, what did you think about the finish of this match? Jake Lee and Fuminori Abe, Jin, defeated Purple Haze, Zeus and Izanagi, and well, this was not for the All Asia Tag Team title, so wondering why.
Well, they didn't want to switch the titles. that's the only reason. Well, we don't want to beat these guys, but we also don't want them to be the champions. So, let's just have them win in a non-title match. I don't really get it, but, you know, it's fine. You know, Jin's a good stable. You know, I'm a big fan of that group, and getting to see Abe on the winning side was a good thing. I really have liked Purple Haze since they've dropped all the Voodoo Murder stuff with Zeus and Izanagi. They've done a good job. When you just let these guys wrestle, they're good. But, you know, it was a fine match. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was, like, you know, anything to blow your Match of the Year ratings up over or anything like that. But Abe did a good job as face in peril type of deal, getting double-teamed by Purple Haze. Jake got to look strong and with the tap-out win. Two odd Zeus, I thought, was a really strong finish to the match there. I think it's probably setting up something in the... are they in the same block in the Champion Carnival?
Oh, I would have to look that up quickly. Would make sense, right?
Yeah, like it would make sense, but...
yes, they are.
So there you go. That seems like it's setting Zeus up to get a win over Jake in the Carnival.
Yeah, yeah. Good. So, yeah, Jake Lee looked good here, I think.
Yeah, he's good.
Like, not standout good.
No. Like I said, it wasn't a special match or anything like that.
On the topic of not a special match, Tajiri defeated Kotaro for the EWA Intercontinental Championship with a buzzer kick in 5 minutes. Very underwhelming, in my opinion. Even for those guys.
You talked about Asuka Pro being the next generation of Wrestling New Classic. This is the next generation of Wrestling New Classic. The EWA title.
True. So, well, Tajiri obviously can't travel to Europe to drop the belt, so why not defend it?
I mean, why not? You know, why not defend it against Udo Mauro here?
I mean, he probably should challenge Yoshitatsu so that Yoshitatsu can become the Triple Crown champion of the mid-card titles.
What do you think about this way? What do you think about this way of using the mist that they've come up with, of basically going to the back and then the guy comes out with a face full of mist?
It's even stupider than doing the ref run.
This wasn't a good match, man.
No, but it wasn't a long match either. So it was
the real
meat of the show followed here with Dan Tamura making his first challenge of the World Junior Heavyweight Championship, and maybe his last, because in all his approaches to wrestling, he already has a moveset that screams heavyweight, in my opinion, especially when he does the power bomb. So he's still in the division of being a junior, but he's clearly trying to go up to the heavyweights, and you could see this in this match. Koji Iwamoto was a good guy to have a first title challenge against because he's somewhat experienced, as he has been a junior champion a lot of times now in All Japan. So, in my opinion, this was a good match. It didn't really last long. It was 13 minutes. It was a good length for a title challenge for Dan Tamura. You probably wouldn't want him to go any longer because he's still learning and finding his way. So, maybe the perfect amount of time for these two to have a title match.
Yeah, good match. Not special. Dan looked good, showed a lot of fire. And that's all you really want from these young guys. Iwamoto was a fine veteran. I thought everything about it was a very solid, you know, semi-main event style of match. And a good setup to what was going to happen, you know, with the division, you know, right after this match.
Yeah. So, a veteran of the scene said he would appear. And everybody immediately said, okay, it's going to be Kuta Hidaka.
Yeah. I love it.
That was great. And it was Ikuto Hidaka. Man, it was great.
Yeah, cool. I'm glad everyone was right. You know, like, you know, this is a great signing for All Japan, or somebody to bring in at least. You know, between Doi and Hidaka, they brought in two pretty solid signings, I thought, and especially Hidaka. I can't wait to see what he does in this division. Getting to wrestle a lot of new, fresh matchups. He brings a new element to everything. And I think he is a great, great wrestler, to be honest with you. Like, no matter where he went, he was going to improve their scene. And I am very happy to see him here. Who, you know, Hidaka, whenever they get to that Sato match, I think it's going to be incredible. And this match with Iwamoto even is going to be really good. I hope he wins the title, personally, you know, because of all the stuff we talked about Iwamoto before. I think he's been around this block many times already, and I would rather see a fresh face with it, personally.
Dude, I don't know about that. I would rather have a proper, good, long title run for Iwamoto, finally, now.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know. Like I said, Iwamoto was fine in this match, but Hidaka's a special talent, like, to me. Like, I would rather go with him, personally. Mm. But Iwamoto's fine. But the question is, what do you do with this long title reign? Because he's faced all these guys. Like, him and Sato have wrestled a million times before.
They have, but as I mentioned, maybe they could be going to other wrestlers on the roster. Maybe they could be going to the likes of Atsuki Aoyagi or Rising Hayato or even Akira Francesco, because all these guys were out.
I like those guys. Yeah, all those guys are good too.
And it was a great showing, in my opinion. They brought out all the guys that All Japan has in their junior division, and it's like 10 guys now, which is great.
Yeah, like you're right. You know, I can see where you're coming from, to be honest. You know, you might be right on that. I do think it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Hidaka going forward if he does lose the title, though, or lose the title match, though. So hopefully they have something in mind for him if he does lose to Iwamoto.
I think they will have. In the main event.
Hey, wait a minute. Oh. What do you think, then? You said that like you knew something.
What did I say?
You were like, I think they will have.
I think they will have something for Hidaka to do, but it's not like you mean look back at how they brought in the Enforce guys. They brought them in strong, then they dropped them for a while, and then they brought them back. It's not like that when Hidaka loses his first title match that's it for him.
No. The juniors, though, like I don't think there's a lot to do. Is the problem outside of the championship match or random undercard matches. Like, look where Sato is right now.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Like, to have him come in and just be another guy in the undercard tags, that's not a lot of fun to me. But then again,
what would you do with Koji Iwamoto except for the exact same thing?
He's been in that role for, like, forever anyway.
Yeah. Another All-Asia tag run with Jake Lee.
Is he in Jin?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure. Like I said, because they had the tag title run earlier last year, too, even.
Yeah.
They're a good tag team. I like them as a team, actually. But I think they might have bigger plans with Jake. You know, so it's fine. I guess it just depends on what you're going to do. And Hidaka, he is pretty old. So I can see why you'd want to go with a younger guy as well. So I don't know. It's fine. Yeah, like, honestly, it's fine either way. If Iwamoto wins, that's totally cool.
It would be fine either way.
Yeah.
World tag team title. Suwama and Shuji Ishikawa once again defended the championship. I was kind of surprised, to be honest. I was kind of expecting Kento and Ikemen to win the title.
Oh, God. I would have hated that.
I did not like the main event.
No, this wasn't a good match at all. I'm glad that they didn't win the title. I don't know if I'm glad you were wrong about this one.
Dude. Whenever they did anything with Jiro's jacket, it was so goofy. And it made Suwama and Ishikawa look so bad because they basically had to fight this jacket when they had these two giant dudes fighting off this much smaller Jiro Ikemen guy. There was not a good story throughout the match. Not a good match at all. Man, I don't know what to say.
Get him out of here! I'm tired of Jiro. Like, get him out of here. Like, he sucks. How could anybody like this dude? Like, there's nothing appealing about him. There's not even a comedic sense. Not even, definitely not as a wrestler. Everything about this sucks. The only positive that they had was the entrance was kept decently short by his standards. It wasn't as long as he's been doing. Because remember, last month, they started to go with these really, like, 5-minute long entrances.
Oh, yeah.
And it was so annoying, first of all. Everything about him is just annoying. Like, he's just like, every time you see him, you just want to punch this little bastard right in the face.
Wow!
Like, every time you see him. Every time you see him, Striga, am I wrong? What lies have I told? Ooh. I'm going to the listeners right now.
I don't get have him out of here. Strong feelings against Jiro, but wow, you do.
Get him out of here, man. I'm so sick of this asshole. Like I said, I was promised he would leave. Like I said, the pandemic is ending. Like, according to the governments, according to the U.S. government, why isn't he here?
Terry is back too, so...
And she needed permission. Why doesn't he need permission? Like, he never got special permission. He just kept wrestling. Right? Where is the contract where WWE gave him permission? Lock this guy in jail. That's where he belongs. It should be illegal to wrestle as bad as Jiro. Like, you know. Seriously, I hate this guy. I hate watching him. I'm so sick of his act. He adds nothing to these shows. And I can't believe that the possibility of him becoming a champion, a title held by the likes of Misawa, Kawada, Kobashi, even Kikuchi. He was never, ever on anybody's level on that end. He is the Masao Inoue of All Japan right now, and perhaps even more annoying, just because of his gimmick. He's a better wrestler. I'll give him that. I'm not going off the rails. I know he's not that bad. But I don't like watching him. That's all I'm saying here. That's all I'm saying. Get him out of here.
All right.
I apologize. I got too heated on that. I apologize.
But I was not expecting this kind of emotional outburst here.
This match sucked.
it did.
Like, I don't want to see this anymore, Striga. Don't we deserve better as fans?
We do. But what is there except for, like, Koji Doi and Kumarashi?
That sounds so much better.
It does, but there's no one else. And that is, I wasn't, like loving the idea of Kento and Ikemen winning, but I was just kind of thinking, where are they going with the Violence Giants now?
That is a good point.
They can do anymore with this tag team because they've been there against all the teams so often. So at least Kento and Jiro would have been something new. But yeah, the The team itself is not good.
Yeah, you're right about the Violence Giants. Like, you know, you are correct on them. It feels like they've been around this block again many times before, except they have had longer reigns other than Iwamoto, and they've wrestled everyone. And I don't know. Like you said, hopefully maybe Doid and, you know, Kuma, they could get that spot. I think they'd be a great choice. But other than that, you know, maybe Jake and Abe might get a title shot after this win. Maybe that's what they were setting up. I mean, I don't know. That's just, that would be a cool match, I feel like.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, but like you said, they've wrestled formations of all of these guys all the time. You know, for the last, what, 3 years? It feels like maybe even longer.
So, no, 3 years, I think it is.
Yeah, about 3 years. So we'll see how it goes. You know, all I will say is I'm sure Ishikawa enjoyed this. And as the rule states, the power of the pencil in wrestling remains strong with the big dog.
Oh, yeah. The power of the pencil, Dylan, in Pro Wrestling Noah has done some...
It needs to hit the eraser on some of their
moves. Has done some questionable things. Katsuhiko Nakajima has turned on Goshi Ozaki to join Kongo. What the fuck?
I was hoping you would have an explanation for this. So this turn makes literally no sense. If you, much like Doi joining Infants, except people actually pay attention to this. We have seen the aggression breakup and how much Kidemiya has hated Nakajima for these past couple of years. So why would he join a stable with him and the man who just knocked him out and took his title? Not like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's the thing about it. I mean, if it had been 6 months ago, okay, fine. But this was literally a couple of
that
weeks
ago. That just happened. It literally just happened. I love how we both had the sigh at the same time.
And we laid out the scenario of the possibility of doing an Axis versus Axis match for the title. And they could have just done that. Yeah, it made perfect sense. And they didn't need to do this. And on top of that, they broke up one of their most popular acts.
And that's really where the problem lies. Like, they've really cut off one of their, like you said, most popular acts all over the place. You know, like, this is a huge deal for Noah. And it's really, like you said, we talked about it a little bit on the last episode. Go has, you know, made a step up in popularity through this title reign. And I think Axis plays no small part in that. Sure. You know, so now you're
he
kind
even
of...
said it. He even said it on his Twitter. He said, I needed it.
And that, I thought that was like, you know, for whatever you want to say about this stupid turn, there's a lot to say about it. I think the way he handled it was very good because they said, basically Nakajima's promo was like, you didn't need me anymore and I damn sure don't need you. And they go put, I did need you on his Twitter. And I thought that was like, that was pretty like heart-wrenching stuff right there, you know, like,
it was.
You know, and a very realistic, like, if you know, if you had turned on me, and said that same thing. Like, if you cut me out of the show and brought on some new guy, and was like, or like five new guys, and like they all hated you like 2 weeks ago, and like you brought them all in and replaced me with them, and was like, I never needed you, Dylan, and you never needed me either. I would say the same thing Go did. I would say, I did need you, Striga. You know, but you know, unfortunately, that will never happen, I hope. Like I said, at least not Kongo. If you're going to replace me, bring in somebody way better, not Kongo. Because Kongo always loses. That's another thing about this. Nakajima's in this geek stable now. And
everyone's in Kongo now.
Yeah. Or Sugiragun. One of those
Kongo,
two factors.
Dylan.
You're in the M Alliance.
I'm now in the M Alliance because because apparently they are doing first names now too.
Yes, yes, that's what we speculated on. Yes, it's what the people wanted. They ran out of last names, so now they have the first
names.
But
I feel that Masakita Miyama, Nabu Soya, and Mohamed Yone were screwed.
They're technically in the group by the rules of M Alliance. They said everyone is in the group who has an M name. So they may be in Congo, but in spirit, they are in the M Alliance. But yeah, this turn with Nakajima, it just doesn't make sense. I think they're really going to take a hit when it comes to the women fans as well, which Axis was a huge draw for them. They always had the photo books and like the fan, you know, like
fan
type of deal.
Signings.
Yeah, yeah. And they're going to lose out on all that now. And they're not going to be able to replace that either. Like, you don't just replace that kind of connection overnight. And they don't have anyone that it would make sense for because they're teaming it made a lot of sense, just with their characters and their histories and Noah. Like, Kaito, I think he's great and all, and, like, a very good young talent, but he just doesn't have that history to where they could just slide him into Nakajima's place and it's going to be a perfect fit. It's just going to be a totally different dynamic now, and I think it's a bad one. There was just no reason to break them up. Like, I think, most importantly, exactly what you started this off with, as we talked about before, they had the title match set up perfectly for Nakajima to win. You didn't need to turn him. That was a great bullet in their chamber that they had, the Axis versus Axis. And, I mean, how many times have we seen that in history? Not just in wrestling, but, you know, in anything. Like, you know, the Team Edward and Team Jacob stuff back in the day with Twilight. Now, you could make that kind of storyline with these two. Like, which one do you support out of Axis? But now they've got it where he's a heel, you know, turned this heel deal with Kongo. Now you take that away, and it's like you've skipped a chapter of the story for no reason. Like, this should have happened like a year from now, I feel like, with him turning on him, and definitely not to join Kongo, and definitely not to join him right after Kenno beat him for his title.
This Axis thing had much more legs to it.
Exactly.
And then there is the thing that the only heel turn move they seem to know is guy turns to Kongo.
And it's with
Tadasuke literally a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about that. Yeah, Tadasuke's now in Kongo as well. I mean, dude, why? Why?
Because everybody that turns heel has to join Kongo.
Who made this rule?
New Japan did when they introduced the Bullet Club.
Kongo is the Bullet Club now? Noah?
Pretty much, isn't it?
Kind of. I mean, they wrestle better, but
that
is one good thing. But and they have the all red. Like, Nakajima needs some like red attire now to join in with them. And who is the leader now? Why would he join them to be under Kenno?
I mean, this may set up Kongo eventually turning on Kenno. It's the only reason that I come up with for Nakajima being in there.
And then where would Kenno go?
Who knows?
Here's my idea.
Sugiyuragun.
Yes, perfect. But my idea was he recruits Kotage, and he recruits Kaito, and he recruits Masakita Miya, and starts the K Alliance to challenge the M Alliance. Because you've noticed you have a lot of K wrestlers in Noah as well.
Special K against the M Alliance.
Yes, though hopefully theirs is much better than the Ring of Honor Special K version. Dixie is not showing up in Noah anytime soon. I can only
serial hope. The serial version.
Yes, that cereal sucks, Stringer.
I know.
Like, nobody eats that crap. But yeah,
I was always wondering who would actually buy that.
That's a good question. You know, I've always said that my favorite cereal was Count Chocula, but they took it away. They don't sell that where I'm at anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, they took that away. They took Axis away.
And then
Dylan, who comes out to make the save for Goshi Ozaki, but the guy that Goshi Ozaki defeated for the title and stole his colors from?
He stole his attire. He stole his identity. You know, you can't team up with this guy again.
I mean they've told the story that Go saved Kaito a couple of times from Kongo, but that still doesn't make up for he stole his title and his colors.
And they were a tag team champions before, so it makes sense for them to be aligned on some level. But like you said, after he won the title and took his gear, you know, you can't just go back to, you know, you can't just forget about all of that. But I guess that's where they see him. And why? Why? What was wrong with Kaito and Inaba as a team? Like, a Go and an Axis being a thing. Why did we have to change all of that around? The only thing I could think of on that is maybe it's going to be like they're forming some kind of, you know, stable. With
yes,
Kaito,
of course they're forming a new stable now.
I mean, that's what we need. as more factions. You know, Go and Inaba at Taniguchi and Kaito. That's a pretty strong group. You know, maybe you could have, you could add Full Throttle or something into them and, like, you know, make them be the whatever juniors.
Main event of the next Noah show that is on this coming weekend is Goshi Ozaki, Kaito Kiyomiya, and Shuhei Taniguchi against Kenno, Katsuhiro Nakajima, and Yoshiki Nomura.
See, that could be a great faction, but I think they're losing out on the fan base of Axis is the problem. You know, I think wrestling-wise, all of those guys you just said are all really good.
And the thing about it is that are four guys that are actually kind of on the same level.
Yeah.
Who's going to lose the match? Who's going to lose the six-man or the eight-man tag? Well, of course, Taniguchi is.
I was thinking Inamura, but sure, Taniguchi is very well.
No, I was talking about the other group with Shiozaki, Kiyomiya, Inaba, and Taniguchi. It's a pretty strong group. It's just four guys where you don't have a clear, quote-unquote, fall guy, unlike in the case of Kongo with Inamura.
Yeah, you're totally right. That was my bad. I'm sorry, I didn't understand that. But yeah, you're completely right. I like them. They're all, you know, similar level. Taniguchi's probably the lower end, but he's still a threat. You know, he's still a credible upper mid-card type of guy. And a good worker, too. Like, all four of those guys are really good in-ring. And I think that's the thing that saves Noah, is that all of these guys we're talking about are all really good in the ring. And, like, whatever combination of them you're going to put together, you're going to get good matches out of them, whether it's Kenno, Nakajima, Kitamiya, Taniguchi, Kaito. Like, all of those guys are really good. You know, Go, obviously. So you have options when it comes to them that maybe, like, an All Japan with Jiro, like, maybe they wouldn't have if they did this kind of thing. But, you know, like, there's no Jiro in Kongo. Like, even Tadasuke is much less annoying, I would argue, than Jiro. And he has bad hair. Like, look at that hair. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I don't mean to insult Tadasuke. Dylan, I like Tadasuke.
The one good thing that came out of this thing here with Axis splitting was Kazushi Sakuraba winning his first title in his wrestling career and tweeting Yoshihashi to tell him about it.
I love it.
Ooh, like, that's so wholesome.
I won my first title too. This is a very wholesome promotion right now. I will give that. With, like, the I needed you to, and I appreciated that. But I think it's cool. I want to see what Sakuraba does in the N1. We got some tweets lately, even from Flash. He piped in. He even said, because of us, he is now more excited for the N1 than the G1.
And we are actually scheduled to do our famous G1 pick'em next week. Well, whenever we get a G1 lineup.
Yeah, I was about to say, what lineup?
Well, we schedule it for next week, expecting a lineup, so we'll see about that.
Yeah, well, we will see how that turns out. But, you know, the wrestling's good in Noah. Let's see. Like, I think the Axis breaking up was really unnecessary and a mistake, especially for the women fan base. But all the matches are going to be good, and they've got the tournament coming up, so they can make this right if they go along with it. This kind of throws a wrench into some things because I still think Nakajima is going to win the tournament. I don't think anything's changed from where we were at before. But now it's just a really stupid storyline, like, now that they've done.
Mm, true.
Yeah.
One more talking point on this show, Dylan, is the formation of Assemble, a new organization to literally assemble a lot of Yoshi companies under their roof. What is there to say about Assemble right now?
Yeah, so this Assemble group, it's kind of... So all these companies are getting together. All of the... It's a who's who of Joshi companies. You've got Sendai Girls, Marvelous, OZ Academy, Pure J, Seed Ring, Wave, Ice Ribbon, Stardom, and Hearts, which is Yumiko Hota's new project after she left AGZ. Actress Girls and Tokyo Joshi Pro and Diana are all out of the picture, no doubt for political reasons in all three cases. But still, so they're all coming together. And they had this press conference where you had people like Nagayo, Takumi Aroha, Mayumi Ozaki, Hota was there, obviously, Asuka, Meiko Satomura, Yoshiko was there, and then you had Dump Matsumoto and Akira Hokuto, who was there as well. And basically, the whole point of that was, like, Hokuto was saying, well, I'm not coming back to wrestling, but I support this group. That was kind of the gist of the press conference. And so their goal is, we don't know if this is going to happen, and it's going to happen. The first show they're going to do is October 1st at Tokyo's Ueno Park, and basically, all the cards are going to have a match, like an offer match, so to speak, for their company. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, like, one match will be an Ice Ribbon match, one match will be a Sendai match, and one match will be a Pure J match, and so on and so forth. And they said they're not going to work together in terms of interpromotional matches, so you won't see, like, you know, Tsukasa Fujimoto versus Mayu Iwatani or something in a match. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Julia versus Tsukasa Fujimoto.
Yeah, no, Julia. So like, just to get into it, and even then, like, they're being very, very careful to avoid political strife in this, yeah. Because, like, they don't want to have any interpromotional
matches. I mean,
it's
impressive enough that Stardom is part of this.
Yeah, that's really the surprising part of all of this, because all the other companies kind of work together anyway. Yeah. Like, right, pretty much.
Stardom was always the company that was kind of the promotion that didn't work together with any other promotions, and the idea behind that was that they wanted to have a unique roster,
yeah,
that doesn't wrestle anywhere else. And I mean, they still will kind of do that when they just do the offer matches on these shows.
Yeah, exactly. They've kind of lightened up on that since Bushiroad took over, bringing in Iroha for a match, and working a little bit closer with Marvelous and stuff like that. But only a little bit. They're still largely, you know, in their bubble.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, like, they're not going to have any inter-promotional matches. And every show, they said, they're going to have a lottery to determine the match order. So, like, they'll put all the matches in a hat, and whoever draws first is the main event. So it could be a Pure J match, it could be a Stardom match, it could be anything, pretty much. Which could lead to some interesting cards, but I do have to say the fact that they're not going to have inter-promotional matches makes me think that they're already kind of on shaky ground. Like, everyone's mm-hmm. already kind of worried about this little scenario. All, you know, the House of Cards collapsing, pretty much. And yeah. I think that's very, very logical, because when I first heard about this before they announced that, I thought this is never going to work. like they're going to hate each other, and everything's going to get messed up, and somebody's going to pull out. Stardom's not going to want their guy to do or their girl to do a job with somebody, and that's going to piss everybody off.
Can you even imagine the tension that must be backstage when all these people are backstage at these shows? I mean, I just mentioned Julia and Tsukasa Fujimoto. I mean, it's not really personal, I think, between the two, but it's personal on the level between Julia and Ice Ribbon.
Yeah, Julia and President Sato is where the real heat is.
Yeah,
for Ice Ribbon. But, like, literally anybody, it's just going to be kind of awkward, you know, to have them back there. And look, Yoshiko and the Stardom Girls.
Oh yeah. Oh yes.
Yeah. Nanai is mm-hmm. going to have to face off.
Yep.
Yeah, so you're going to have all kinds
You're going to have many, many, many strong characters that want their project to have the brightest spotlight on him. You mentioned Dump Matsumoto is there. Yumiko Hotta is there. Nanai Takahashi. Meiko Satomura. Sendai Girls. Stardom with Rossi Ogawa, of course. That are all very strong, strong characters that want their project to gain the most out of this.
Yeah, this is a powder keg, you know, when you look at it. That was my first reaction, and I kind of posted something on Twitter mm-hmm. about this, because obviously everyone's really excited.
I forgot to mention Mayumi Osaki. Sorry, she may be the strongest of all of these.
Yeah, she's definitely the craziest, I think, in terms of her wrestling.
Chikusa Nagayo first, too.
Oh, yeah, Nagayo. Yeah, yeah, that's going to be kind of wild. But yeah, there's a lot of strong personalities. Hokuto's there. We don't really know what impact she'll have. It just seems like she's kind of like an ambassador to all of this. But of course,
I'm holding it together backstage.
Yeah, probably is. She's like the glue to yeah. all of this. But yeah, so whenever this started, everyone was super excited, and I was like, oh man, I don't know if this is going to end up working out long term. But for a show a month, having kind of a super show, so to speak, I think here's the problem. Like, if you have the interpromotional matches, you're risking that powder keg exploding. And everything getting even worse than it was before, because all the bridges may get burned if that happens. But if you don't have any interpromotional matches, then it makes one wonder. I just don't think there's that much upside to this.
No, what's the goal of this?
Yeah, exactly. I will say, like, for a smaller company, Pure J, sure. Wave, Marvelous, they're going to get a bump just by being on the same show as a Stardom match that they could have, especially if they put it on their streaming service, which I don't know if there are any plans for. There was never any announcement on even a Nico Nico stream for the first show anyway. But if they put it on the Stardom show or have the Stardom account tweeting about it, that's something for them to hold on to. That's something that they could gain from the Wave, the Pure Jays. But, you know, like, it makes me wonder what if Tokyo Joshi Pro was even invited to this, because there's so much heat between everyone else. It's hard to imagine that one company is suddenly the one that's ostracized when you've got a Seed Ring and a Stardom working together, or a Stardom and Ice Ribbon. Just a few years ago, it was supposed to be Thunder Rock, Io Shirai and Mayu Iwatani versus Best Friends from Ice Ribbon, Fujimoto and Arisa Nakajima, and things got really ugly behind the scenes, and that match ended up not even happening, because... You know, somebody didn't want to do a job, like, you know, pretty much.
Man, I can totally see that, because why would you do that?
And I'm just saying, like, you know, like, I wonder if Tokyo Joshi Pro was just like, yeah, we're good. You know,
yeah.
Like, well, with all this.
I think they are just good in working with the DDT and having their wrestlers appear on big DDT shows. I mean, I think it's for the best for Tokyo Joshi Pro to not be part of this.
I don't think it would have hurt them, Eddie. I just think that, you know, I just don't think there's that much upside to this concept unless they start doing the interpromotional matches. Like, if you have a Mayu versus a freaking, you know, Nanae or something, or maybe they can reform their team, because they used to be a tag team when Nanae was still in Stardom. Maybe they can have a tag team match versus Best Friends. But all that stuff isn't going to happen politically.
Whenever there is somewhat of a big show or a big come together of Japanese wrestling promotions, we always hit the brakes, Dylan. We always say, we are not going to get Katsushika Okada versus Kento Miyahara. That's not going to happen. The best case scenario for an interpromotional match would be a tag or a six-man tag, even in this case, or especially in this.
Yeah, they don't even want to. They don't even want to do any matches right now. So, like I said, until they break open that interpromotional egg with Stardom and the other promotions, I just don't think there's that much upside, and I just can't see that happening considering Stardom's history when it comes to interpromotional wrestling. They have a little bit of a relationship with Marvelous. Maybe you could have a match there, but. How are they going to work that out with Yoshiko facing a Stardom wrestler? Like, or something like that. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's basically impossible politically for this concept to meet its full potential. So I would say having a show a month, like a Joshi buffet kind of, like, a, you know, you get a match every month. But even then, there might already be problems because Wave and Ice Ribbon Stardom aren't going to be on the first show. Like, they've already announced. So there could be something behind the scenes we don't even know about already. So that would be my only advice to all the fans out there. And I love Joshi wrestling. I love all wrestling. But I would love to see Joshi get back to the golden days and all of that. I just don't know if this concept is going to be the one to do it, because there is just too many cooks in the kitchen and too many combustible components of this whole situation for it to really, again, meet its potential. And again, and just to bring it back to kind of where we started on this whole show, I just don't understand why now. During the middle of this pandemic, why now to have this show? Like, it's not going to be able to be as successful as you want it to be when you're in the middle of the pandemic. So even on October 1st, I just can't imagine things are just going to magically open up and be back to normal by then. So I don't understand it, man, at that level. This should be something that should have been planned about. They should be talking about this now, and a year from now this gets announced. Like, to me, like, to sort out every possible bullcrap political thing that they need to sort out. But doing it now in the middle of a pandemic is just... I just don't see this will be a big deal. I hate to say that, because it's a cool concept on paper. Maybe they'll have a great card and that could really blow things up. But we're going to see how it plays out, and hopefully it works out, but I'm just not that confident.
For this time, I'm on your side with this. Not going to get my hopes up for this one. But we'll see.
Hey, one more thing before we get out of here, because I just real quick. Yes. What do you think of the great card? Because we talked about it a little bit last week, and then they announced the card here. And so I think that's a good kind of like tie-in with this Assemble, because now we've got this great company doing their own thing. What do you think of the first card?
I still think that they have some matches on the card that can live up to the concept that they want to do.
Right.
But, like, not in the way that it was probably expected.
Yeah. I mean, I think the card's good. Like, if you look at the matches, like I said, I kind of mentioned this on the last episode. I really wasn't expecting it to be what maybe you guys thought it would be, like, you know, and what they kind of announced it to be. Mm-hmm. I had already figured that wasn't going to happen in 2020, so I'm not disappointed at all.
But you know, if you look at what they actually did, of course, as I said they will probably do some Nozawa things, and they have Kazayashi against Nozawa on the card. But then they also have some very interesting matches on the card with UWF rules, with Minoru Tanaka and Masakatsu Funaki against Katsuki Okubo and Takanori Ito. They have Yu against Asuka in a UWF rules match, which will be very cool. Kenoa against Soma Watanabe also. It's not like UWF rules, it's going to be a regular singles match, but the Super Dream Great Six-Person Tag Match looks pretty fun too, with Kendo Kashin, Katsuki Fujita, and Takashi Sugiura against Jun Akiyama, Daisuke Sakamoto, and Shuhei Taniguchi. So a good card, and some shoot-style matches announced.
Yeah, it was actually Yu versus Shuri, not Yu versus Asuka, in the UWF.
Oh, Shuri, right, yeah.
Yeah. Well, which is that this is her style, but this is like my number one pet peeve in wrestling, and now's a good time as any to air this. I hate when they advertise UWF rules and it's not UWF rules. Like, I want UWF rules. I want the point system. I want the striking, because remember when they did that Suzuki and Sakuraba match at the Dome? That was not a UWF match at all.
Mm. No.
Like, there was nothing resembling a UWF match in that match. So I don't want to see that crap. If you're going to advertise UWF rules, I want it to be UWF rules. Not just, well, you got to win by submission. That's a submission match. That's not UWF rules. But still, though, like, those matchups are awesome. Shuri and Yu and the tag match, I think. And I love that they've, you know, ultimately, I think it's going to be what I thought it was going to be originally. That it's this kind of secondary company to Noah. And we're seeing it already with a lot of the Noah talent. You're even getting Akiyama to come in from DDT, and I still think that there's more to them being in bed with DDT or Cyberfight rather than maybe is getting let on. And well, I think,
of course, now, yeah, clearly,
yeah. I think it's true. I think we could see these shows on Wrestle Universe eventually. I speculated on that all along, and this one wasn't announced, but I love the concept of this. Even if it's just what it is, if it's not a shoot style concept, I don't think that's a terrible thing. You've got some elements on the show that maybe they could work out, but if this is just a secondary company for Noah to build around two young guys in Ito and Soma, I think that's great, and I think that's what's going to make or break this whole project. If Watanabe can show up and have a great match with Keno and look like a star, then this is successful no matter what it's called or what the rules are or what the concept is. If they just kind of let this languish and not be anything, then you have to wonder about it for all the reasons we said before. But I think it's a great card. Like, ultimately, like, whatever you say about the shoot style, I think it's a really good card, and I'm looking forward to it next month.
It's kind of the middle ground of what we two expected. I expected it to be more shoot style. You expected it to be more Nozawa idiocy. It's kind of in the middle ground here.
Yeah, they've got a good card. It's definitely not. I didn't think it would be completely idiocy. I just didn't think it would be a shoot style promotion. Yeah. Ultimately, and like if you could get one match, that's all I wanted. And they gave us, you know, maybe even two, even though I don't know if that tag match will be like a real UWF style match, but it'll still be a great match, so who cares? You know, like, ultimately, like, you know, I'm not obsessed with it being a shoot style gimmick or anything. I just think that it'll be good for what it is, and I look forward to the card. You know, that even that one match with Nozawa and Kaz, I think that'll be very inoffensive undercard fair, and everything else looks really good. So I just want to put it out there because we talked about it last week and we kind of had that lead in with a symbol. I think they did a good job for the first card, personally.
Yes, they did. All right, Alan. I think that's about it for this episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast. If you enjoyed listening to us, you can get a lot more, mostly of Dylan right now, because I have a lot of things to take care of job-wise. So please check us out on our Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat, and also check out Dylan's Twitch channel, where he does a lot of cool things and some questionable things too.
Maybe cool or questionable, but always crazy, I think, on the Twitch channel. But the Patreon's really cool. I covered every tournament last month successfully, DDT, Tokyo Joshi Pro, and Stardom, the two shows that they had. We're going to pick up Stardom again in a couple of days. All Japan, Noah, New Japan, all of the tournaments will be covered. The only Patreon in existence and the only show in existence that will cover every tournament as they happen, as they air, you will get it if you subscribe to the...
You are crazy.
I am crazy, but this is my life, Stricker. No. But yeah, like, you go
you
on
need
there,
it.
I need it. Like, I cannot live without it. But yeah, you know, so you're going to get a coverage of everything. Like I always say, even if you don't watch everything, subscribe to the Patreon, listen to me, and tell your friends my opinions like they're your own. You'll look smarter that way. You'll become a wrestling genius just by listening to me on Patreon. And Strigger, we got some good stuff on there too. We've covered all of the third generation, except for Kojima, which we're going to get to eventually.
Three now. Yeah. We wanted to do that, but...
We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there eventually.
and we've done three of the four of the third generation and all three of the Three Musketeers. So all the legends, you get good stuff with me and Striga on. Me and Fredo cover the 90s project or the top 10. We're all the way up to 94 now. We're doing great things. But the tournaments are going to be a big news. This is the best month ever to subscribe to our Patreon because you get super coverage. And Twitch channel, twitch.tv/shadowsoverheaven. What a fun time. Eastern Lariat Wrestling. We just crowned our first ever champions in the six-man tournament on last week's show. Striga's team lost in the finals to Time Out, the super group. It was neither of our group is the best group right now in ELW. It was Shinjiro Otani. And due to some crazy storyline factors in Fire Pro, Kazuchika Okada left New Japan Pro Wrestling. Because they messed up the negotiations for him. So he'll be making his debut against all odds versus Otani in the main event of the next show. The Fighting Road career mode is insane. I just got done with my excursion, or at least a big feud in it, against, get this, Striga, Karts Rowdy, the man who is the king of American wrestling in Fire Pro Wrestling, which I like to speculate he's a former go-kart driver turned... very angry wrestler. But yes, follow all that. It's all good stuff. It's all a lot of fun. Thank you to everybody who's done it so far. As Big Time Rush once said, I'm almost kind of sort of halfway there to becoming an affiliate. So tell your friends, follow the Patreon, but most importantly, follow the Eastern Lariat, the number one show for Japanese pro wrestling of every kind.
This show is almost kind of sort of definitely over now. Yes. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
Streaming worldwide, this is the MLWRadio.com network.